Hello, McLean Johnson here. Welcome to the Sunday Jam Podcast. This episode is an interview with saxophone player Jeff Coffin. And Jeff is a member of Bella Fleck and the Flecktones. And he's also a member of the Dave Matthews Band. And this fall, he will also be touring with his own group, Jeff Coffin's Mutet. And for more information on Jeff, check out jeffcoffin.com. And to subscribe to the podcast, please check out sundayjam.podomatic.com.
When did you first start playing saxophone, or what first got you interested in playing it?
I started in fifth grade in the school band program up in Maine. And, originally I wanted to play the drums. Probably everybody wants to play the drums. But I think I was really attracted to rhythm at the time. And I always have been. I've always been probably more attracted to rhythm than I have been to harmony. And so when I first started playing, I would kind of pick out tunes and sort of play on the instrument outside of the school band in a way that it was kind of experimental. I mean, for that age, just picking out little melodies and playing along with certain things. And I remember that when I was in band, I wouldn't usually play the parts that were written for me. I would usually end up picking out different parts of the melody throughout the tune. And there was a trombone player and I. We used to stand up, actually, during school band and play. My director was cool enough, actually, to let us do that. Because he saw that there was passion for it even then. So that's kind of where I started. That's, through having a really great teacher who was very open and encouraging, that's what kept me playing.
It's neat that even from the beginning you were just willing to try new things and improv.
Yeah, well, it was always interesting to me. I think I've always been really drawn to melodies also. And I still am. For me, if there's not a really great melody going on, I'm not really that interested. I think that's one of the reasons why I love world music so much also, is that because I'm not really so much into lyrics. I like lyrics, but I'm not so much into them. It's hard for me to sort of get past a melody. When I listen to a tune, I'm kind of getting lost in what's going on melodically. So that when I listen to, say, African music or Indian music or whatever it may be, folk music from around the world, I don't really have to know what they're saying to enjoy the music. I can really listen to that melody and to the rhythmic underlying, and I find that I really enjoy that music, I think, because of that.
It seems like that attitude has really helped you to be so versatile in terms of all the people you played with. I mean, from Mutet to Dave to Humphreys to, Flecktones, you're able to fit in so many different styles and situations.
Yeah, I think it has served me well. I think that all those groups that you just mentioned, there are two of the things that I'm so drawn to are, again, the rhythmic aspect and the melodic aspect. And I find that there's a lot of harmonic complexity going on as well. Sometimes it's through the rhythmic complexity. If you've got kind of a different kind of rhythm going on, and even with a simple harmony, it can turn into something more complex because of the rhythmic aspect of it. So it starts, I think that all those bands and a lot of the other ones I've been drawn towards, have a real balancing of those three elements of the rhythm, harmony, and the melody. And those are what I call, some of the fundamentals that are out there also. And it's still what I'm attracted to.
You're going to be touring with the Mutet in the fall. And how did the Mutet come together? How did you guys get started?
Well, it started a long time ago when I first moved to Nashville right out of college. I started, doing some of my own gigs and started a jam session here. And I kind of wanted to have a band that was sort of able to play anything. So the word mutet comes from the word mutation. And I believe that, the one thing that is constant is change. And that music has to change also in order for it to feel like it's alive. It has to continue to change and develop and morph. And mutate, if you will, trying to take the best elements of something and grow on those. So So the band's been together for a number of years. The whole point of the group is to have different people playing in it, kind of a lot of the time, like different configurations. And this group, with Jeff Seip, Pofi Burbridge, and Felix Pastorius, who is Jocko's son, I've been trying to get this group out on the road for about 3 years now in this configuration. And Jeff and I had talked about it quite a while back as something that, that he and I really wanted to do together. So we've got a couple of runs this fall. The Dave Matthews tour ends in beginning of October. So we'll have about a week before we go out for just a few days. I'm just doing a couple of short runs. You know, my last year has been incredibly busy, and gratefully so. You know, it's been a really amazing, amazing year for me. But, you know, I don't want to fill up my off time completely. I want to be able to go out and sort of choose the projects I want to do and really focus my efforts in there with composition and making sure things are taken care of as far as all the music, and be able to do clinics with the group also. I think that those guys have such incredible things to say that tying in with my educational slant, it allows me to, you know, bring other people's perspectives to young players and seasoned players also. I mean, who doesn't want to hear what Jeff Seip has to say? You know, I don't want to hear it every day.
You've always been big on spreading advice to kids. And what is some of the biggest advice you can give to younger players?
Oh, that's easy, man. Work on the fundamentals. I have what I call the big five, and those things. The big five are five of the fundamentals, and I still haven't yet found anything that doesn't come underneath those. And their tone and dynamics is one. Harmony is another one. Rhythm and time is another one. Articulation, and at the very top, of the list, the thing that you know, I feel is, you know, got to be the most important thing is the skill of listening.
That's cool that you're so committed to continue to teach.
You know, it's important to me, man. I really feel like I've been given a lot. I mean, I think I've worked really hard also, but I think that I've had a lot of opportunity to be able to do a lot of different things. And my degree is in education, first of all. And I've always had an interest in that. I never really had a desire to, you know, say teach high school. I think eventually I'll end up, you know, doing a college gig somewhere. You know, eventually after I get off the road and decide to, you know, be more in one place. But I really enjoy, you know, I enjoy that process of watching somebody learn and watching them sort of open up to new things and new perspectives and just encouraging them, you know, encouraging the experimentation. And a lot of times people, you know, think of the word improvisation. It's kind of a word that gets thrown around a lot. And most people don't really know what it means. And that's not to be condescending at all, but most people haven't really researched where that word comes from, and it's from a Latin root. The root of the word is improvisio. And that word, when you translate it, can be literally translated as unexpected or surprise. And so what I tell people, I tell young players that improvisation has nothing to do with music. And they kind of look at me like, well, what are you, nuts? But it really doesn't have anything to do with music, but it has everything to do with music. It has to do with the spirit of what's being put out there. And so one of the things I tell them, I said, when you're being asked to improvise, so you're not being asked to play a bunch of scales or a bunch of patterns or anything like that. You're being asked for something unexpected or something surprising. And if it contains those elements, that's fine. But by working on the fundamentals, by really digging in on this stuff, it gives you more opportunity for surprise, for the unexpected. By having more control over everything that you're doing, it gives you that greater potential for the spirit of improvisation, in my opinion.
You work in so many different styles of music. Are there any styles you would love to work in that you haven't yet?
Well, that I haven't yet? Yeah, African. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I haven't really played with many African musicians, and that's been a style of music that has been at the forefront of my listening for about the last 20 years. And Dave and I talk about African music quite a bit. He's a big fan of Abdullah Ibrahim, mm-hmm. Who's a great South African pianist, and Umu Sangare, who's a great Malian singer. She's the diva of Mali, and you know, with him being from South Africa, also he understands those rhythms and the complexities of that music. And with Bela, you know, Bela just came back from Africa a few years ago after doing 5 weeks there from east to west, and he has a really incredible movie that he did called Throw Down Your Heart, which I just saw here in Nashville a couple of nights ago, about his Africa trip, about going and searching out the roots of the banjo. And so, you know, I'm kind of living vicariously through him a little bit right now, which is great, you know. He gets to do the work, and I get to enjoy it.
Nice.
But I would really love to work with some African musicians, even some South American. There's some incredible music out of Brazil that I've discovered in the last couple of years, out of northeastern Brazil. It's fife and drum music, and also different styles of choro music. And, so I'd like to delve into that a little bit more. Tim Reynolds and I play a lot of choro music on the road. We get together and read out of these Brazilian choro books, and I just play acoustic guitar and I'll play flute, and it's really nice, man. It's kind of an opportunity for him and I to spend some time together and to work on some music that's challenging and difficult for us, and you know, we end up cracking up about halfway through it. You know, and we just have a great time with it. So, you know, I'm always looking for different styles to incorporate, not only musically but also composition.
It's amazing that you just keep expanding your sonic palette.
There's so much music that's out there, and you know, Bela said an interesting thing at the movie the other night, because he was there and he talked a little bit about it. And somebody was asking him, you know, if he feels like it changes the way that he plays, and he said, yeah. He said I usually spend about 2 years really delving into a particular project. And he said, it is the influence. It's almost like wearing different clothes, and you sort of incorporate them into your style after a while. But as he said, you know, I'm never going to be an African musician. You know, it's not going to happen. But he will have a lot of those African influences in his music, and I hear it already. I told him, I said, that when you were playing that solo piece, I said, there's a particular role in the way that you're playing, just feel-wise, that's different than before he started playing with all these African musicians. And so I think that's something that naturally comes out. You know, I played in the Cuban band here in Nashville for about 12 years also, and that had a lot of influence on me as well. You know, the way I write, the way I play, the way I listen, the way I understand music. And so all these different elements that we get to experience, we get to bring into whatever experience we're having at that particular time. And all the stuff with the Flecktones that I've done, I've been playing with those guys since 1997. Mm-hmm. All that influence, you know, comes into play when I get to compose or make up parts or solo. You know, when I get a chance to even with Dave, when I'm playing a solo, you know, Carter and I lock up really well together, and he's got such an incredible rhythmic vocabulary. Like I said before, I'm really interested in rhythm, so I'm really intrigued constantly by what he plays and how he plays it. So I'm trying to get up inside of that also and grab that influence and make it a part of my playing. So it's, you know, it's this whole give and take. It's, we're all teachers and we're all students all the time. We just have to realize that we need to be open to that. To me, you know, the day that I stop learning and the day that I'm not interested is the day that I want to put the horn away. And I hope that never happens. I hope that day never comes.
Who were some of your biggest influences when you first started playing?
When I first started playing, I was living up in Maine, in a little town, literally in the dead center of Maine. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't hear a lot of music other than kind of what we had at the house, and sometimes you know, what other people would share with me, my director and different folks. So at first, you know, I was influenced a lot by Tom Scott, who's a West Coast session musician primarily. He had a bunch of solo records out. He's still around. I got to meet him a couple of years ago, which was really kind of a surreal experience for me. And Eddie Harris, the great tenor saxophone player, Eddie Harris. I had some big band stuff, too, that my dad was checking out, some Brubeck. But, you know, I was listening to pop music also, Zeppelin, and, you know, even pop stuff like Foreigner and Styx, and you know, whoever was popular at the time, because that's really all we had was a few records and the radio stations. So that was mainly the influence at first. And, you know, but I was always influenced by vocalists, too. I found that when I would listen to whatever station, sometimes it would be like oldie stations, sometimes it would be stuff that was, you know, popular in the early, mid-70s, you know, the soul stuff. And I would just love it, man. When I would hear, you know, Gladys Knight or Aretha or Marvin Gaye or Otis Redding or you know, whoever, I would just go, wow, man, I just, that's what I want to do. You know, I want to be able to pull that kind of emotion out of a note. And I always found that I was more attracted to songs that were slower rather than faster. I found that I really liked the way that you can manipulate a note. The emotion that you can get out of a longer note, I think, is probably, I think it's an arguable point, but I think that you can pull out more emotion on a longer note than you can on a shorter note sometimes. And that's what I listen for. I listen for that emotive quality.
You were inspired to create these melodic lines like vocalists.
Yeah, absolutely, and I still am. That was a big influence for me. I've always loved working with vocalists. The way that I phrase, the way that I articulate, I'm trying to sort of get inside the vocal line. Mm-hmm. But I think the voice is the most natural instrument there is. And when I'm playing, I'm trying to think like a vocalist a lot of times, especially when I'm playing with a vocalist. You know, if I'm playing a line that somebody else is singing, if I'm playing a harmony or something, I'm going to try to get sort of inside of there. It's almost like I want to be wrapped by their sound. Mm-hmm. I want to sort of be inside their sound. Like if you make a fist and you put the other hand over that fist, that's kind of like visually what I'm thinking about.
You want that sort of tightness.
Yeah, I want that tightness, but I also want there to be room in the, you know, sort of manipulate the sound in a way that allows me to sort of, you know, timbre-wise to inflect, you know, to be able to sort of match up and really get inside of that.
Who are some of your favorite vocalists to work with?
Some of those, to work with. Well, certainly Dave. I love the way he sings. I think his melodies are as strong as anything that's been out there, period. Mm-hmm. Let's see, other vocalists I've worked with, you know, there's a number of songwriters in town here that I did work with for quite a number of years. But as far as people you would really know about, there's probably not many. But there's, you know, different jazz vocalists. Again, not that you would necessarily really know about, because a lot of the music I've played for a long time has been instrumental music. And so those influences, having worked with vocalists, came a little bit earlier on in my career when I was at school. But I'm as influenced, I would say, by vocalists as I am by instrumentalists. And so I did a lot of that work early on, even blues guys. You know, I played the blues circuit down in Texas for a while also, which was a huge education for me, you know, to be able to go and play that music. You know, I think that's what's missing a lot of times for me in certain musicians is that element, that deep understanding of the blues, you know, and whether it's John Lee Hooker or Robert Johnson or Lead Belly, or, you know, looking for the influences of that in North Africa and the music of Mali. That stuff is really important in sort of understanding where that comes from, listening to the vocal stylings, listening to the storytelling, listening to the inflection of the end of a note. Those things are all really important to me. And so, again, getting to work with a vocalist again, for me, is really, really great. I absolutely love it.
You can really play any style. I mean, I saw you in New Orleans a while back at the Maple Leaf, and you were playing funk, blues, everything.
Well, all that stuff is really, you know, it's, to me, there's only 12 notes, you know, so again, getting back to the rhythmic aspect of things, if you want to change the sound of a group, you change the drums.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that has everything to do with the feel of what's going on. So, you know, especially in New Orleans, it's the first generation off of where all that stuff came from.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been watered down and filtered. As you get further away from the Mississippi, it gets diluted, and that doesn't mean that it's any better or any worse, but it gets slightly diluted as you get these different influences in there. But going down to New Orleans, you know, hanging out with guys like Wolfman and, mm-hmm. and Johnny Badalkovich and Russell Batiste, George Porter, et cetera, I mean, all the cats, man. I mean, their music speaks volumes of the history of music in this country. And having an opportunity to hang out with the Mardi Gras Indians, also with the Yellow Pocahontas, man, I've never experienced anything like that. And that tradition is 300 years old, man. It's tambourines, vocal, and dance.
Mm-hmm.
It's Brazilian, it's African, it's Haitian, it's Cuban, but it's also New Orleans, man. And I'm getting goosebumps right now just thinking about it. That's how profound it is to me.
Because there's something so pure about that.
Yes, the first generation. Like I said, man, it hasn't been split. And to be able to experience that music on that level is something that everybody should experience, I think. You know, in New Orleans, like I tell people, she wrapped her heart around me, you know, mm-hmm. or she wrapped herself around my heart. And you know, it was hard to leave. I was only there for a couple of months when we were recording the record with Dave, but it was really hard to leave, man. And I missed her before I even left.
That was Jeff Coffin. And once again, I'm McLean Johnson, and thank you so much for tuning in to the Sunday Jam Podcast. For updates, or to download past episodes of the show, please check out sundayjam.podomatic.com.